welcome to the All Things Overlanding podcast. My name is Fletch, and I'll be your host. Are you ready for some great overlanding content? Then let's get into it. Hey everybody, Fletch from All Things Overlanding here. On today's extra special episode of the podcast / vlog, I am doing my first international interview. I'm actually talking to a gentleman named Ferenc Elikas, and he is from Hungary. It was a great interview, tons of fun, and this dude, man, and his girlfriend have been all over the place, like epic trips. Like, he mentioned that he went on a trip that was like 32,000 miles, which is crazy. So you're definitely going to want to check this one out front to back. Like, this was really super fun, and the stuff that this guy's done is amazing. So get ready for it. I'm going to put links to all of his channels and everything down below. Definitely go give this guy a follow because he makes some really cool content. His main sort of focus right now is definitely going to be his website, which is overlandsite.com. So you'll definitely want to go there and check stuff out. He's making content for people that are interested in getting into overlanding, people that want to do it full time, how to make money on the road, like tons of great stuff. And we're going to dive more into that in the interviews. So listen to the podcast, watch the video on YouTube, and then go follow Ferenc on Overland Site on Instagram and on his website. So here we go. So as you just heard, today we're talking to Ferenc from Overland Site. So welcome, Ferenc, to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. Hi, everyone. Sure.
Yeah. So it's 11 a.m. where I am, and it's 5 p.m. where you are, right?
That's correct, because I'm in Europe. I'm in Hungary, Budapest, okay. Sitting in my garage right now, nice. Just next to my spare tires and everything. So, yeah, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's awesome. Well, welcome. I'm excited to have you. So thanks for reaching out to me. Ferenc actually reached out to me and said, hey, I saw your stuff and I wanted to be on the show. And I was like, man, that's really cool. Like, I've never interviewed someone from Europe. So, and your trips are epic. And we'll get into that here in a little bit. But man, if you guys don't, you should definitely go. I'll put links below in the description to all of Ferenc's stuff. But he has done some crazy trips, awesome trips, things that I can only imagine. So again, we'll get into that here in a little bit. But definitely go down to the description and check out all his channels. So we'll just dive into it. So, you know, obviously the topic du jour, the topic of the moment is coronavirus. How has that affected your plans or any trips that you were going to take?
It did affect it, and it keeps affecting it because, yeah, as you mentioned, we've done some major trips in the past, recently actually, and we plan to continue those kind of plans for 2020. And it's not happening. So Our plans were to actually, we currently drive, we're on two Land Cruisers. Nice. And one of them would be a GX470 in the US. So Lexus, okay, GX470, that's a Land Cruiser 120 here. And I also own an FJ40. And The reason why I'm mentioning is because these are our vehicles right now, but we plan to actually invest into like a 4x4 van. Not to necessarily live the van life as such, but to have a 4x4 van, still visit the same places, but then not having to set up a rooftop tent every night. Yeah. And that our goal was to go around Europe and just see the places that we haven't seen. We've been literally everywhere in Europe, but not as overlanders. And that's what we plan to do this year. Go up to the highest mountains and remotest camp areas and just do that this year. It's not happening. So
Do you guys have any end in sight, or have you heard anything about, are they going to loosen restrictions at some point? Or
it's not too bad here actually, in Budapest right now. There are restrictions in place and you have to wear a mask in public transport and in supermarkets and places like that, but and they've been easing these restrictions as well, and some very mild travel restrictions there are in place too, but not too bad compared to many other places. So It's getting better a little bit. I doubt I doubt that this is the end. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
You know, who knows? Who knows? We're just waiting for it to end at this point, right? I just want to get back out there. So you talked about a couple of vehicles you have, and you know, my belief based on what you said you have is that you like older vehicles, but you tell me, do you prefer like the value of a newer vehicle that's quote unquote more reliable, or do you like older vehicles? What's your preference?
I don't think the reliability comes, or there's a correlation between reliability and how new the vehicle is. I think it may be the opposite. And the reason is that if there is an issue with a newer vehicle, you're completely stuck. You're totally stuck because of the electronics. Whereas there is an older vehicle, you might need a spanner and then you do something with it and then you might be able to fix it. Not me personally. I don't know how to fix cars or trucks, but I know some very basic stuff that I can do. But if there's a breakdown, I don't know what to do, but I know some basic checks. But the point is, I do like a little bit older vehicles, not necessarily. I own a FJ40, which is 1978 FJ40. I think that's a bit over the board. That's too old to be reliable. Okay. On the other hand, I don't want to have like a 2018 something either because of all the electronics. I like the mechanical deflocks and the mechanical, transmissions and all that without all the gadgets. Like there's a balance in between, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. There definitely seems to be that, I feel like there seems to be that thought that newer vehicles are more reliable, right? And sure.
And they should be.
If it's really new. They should be, right. Yeah, but I mean, who knows what happens to a brand new, $65,000 4Runner when you go through a water crossing up to your door handles, all those electronics, who knows? So, exactly. So you
obviously... And I think as far as I've been following your channel, I think you sort of drive a very similar aged vehicle that I do. Yeah. Like mine is a 2006.
Okay. Yeah, mine's an 05.
Yeah. So it's about the same amount of electronics, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you can kind of, what I like is that you can look at the history, right? Like the GX470 is a bulletproof motor, bulletproof transmission. Those things are just amazing. And it's sort of the same with the 4-liter and the 5-speed in the Xterras. Is if you can look back at those vehicles and see their history and see their reliability, like then you're, to your point, you're not getting a less reliable vehicle. You're probably getting a more reliable. I mean, I put 40,000 miles on mine in the last 4 years and have 133,000. It's still, I go out and it starts up every time. And stock everything. Like I replaced brakes and some suspension parts and that's about it. So. Might've frozen. Variants. Are you there? Parents.
I'm here.
You're back.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back. Back.
Sorry about that.
I think it's just slow. The internet slowed now. I think that's all. So what I was saying is that we had some major issues during our trips with our Toyota, but is nothing that couldn't be fixed and nothing that it was actually stopping us from continuing. I can get into more details later, but it was issues that had to be fixed for sure, but it didn't stop us from progressing our trips. And something that I wanted to say, and sorry, you might need to edit this out, but what did you just mention about your kid? My vehicle got 200,000 miles on it now, so it's 360,000 kilometers right now, and it just I use it every day. I drive it every day in the city, outside the city. It's fantastic, I think, and it's not a new vehicle. As you said, all my drivetrains are stock, completely stock. I've got a 3-liter diesel engine, an automatic transmission, and all I replaced was the suspension and obviously some stuff that to improve like snorkel and the bash plates and things like that, roof rack and stuff like that. But I didn't touch the drivetrain at all.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And I'm obviously biased, right? Like I like Japanese vehicles. I love Nissans. I just like Nissans because they're cheaper, and I feel like they're just about as reliable as a Toyota or a Honda.
Maybe it's underrated. But I mean, it could be underrated.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like they're way underrated. Like, and I've said this before, but I was looking at like 99 through 02 4Runners with about 150 to 200,000 miles on those, and they wanted $10,000 to $12,000 4 years ago for those. And in the US here, and I found my 05 Xterra, so, you know, 3 to 6 years newer with 94,000 miles for $7,000.
Right.
So it was like, yeah, that's a no-brainer, right? So, but anyway, they're all awesome, right? Like, there are still tons of Toyotas with 200 plus just running. So
the very good thing with driving a Toyota is that anywhere you drive on the planet, you will find a Toyota dealership or a garage that knows how to fix Toyotas, and you will find parts. And I've done a big trip through Europe and Asia with a Mitsubishi pickup truck before, and we got stuck on the Afghan border in Tajikistan, and we literally had to abandon the vehicle because we couldn't find parts.
Jeez.
The alternator died. We literally we had a time constraint, so we had to go. We couldn't wait 4 weeks for an alternator to be replaced. So we had to leave the car there.
Oh my
God. The truck there.
That's a crazy story. That's
nearly impossible with a Toyota, because literally every village will have a mechanic who knows how to fix a Toyota.
Sure. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and in your situation, you know, here in the United States, like, we have a pretty complex dealer network, and there you can't get too far away. But I imagine over there, it's a little different.
Yeah, it's. I mean, in Europe, you don't have any issues with driving anything. But if you go to Asia and you get to the really remote places, then you really need to drive something that you can find parts for, or at least you find somebody to. Even if you carry all the parts, you need somebody. Unless you're a mechanic, you need to find somebody to put it in for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you have a like favorite season or time of the year that you like to go? Are you a cold weather or warm weather camper? What's your preference?
I'm probably in between, but if I really had to choose, probably warm weather. Warm weather. I really don't like the cold, and that's another reason why we're getting a van in the future. We haven't got it yet, because it's just as much fun as it is to live out of a rooftop tent and your vehicle and you have your little kit around it and all your gear and stuff, you do everything outside, and if the weather is not perfect, your comfort is not the best, but it's not as adventurous. I get that as well. I really like the you know, the treehouse type feeling of a rooftop tent. But it's got the advantages, and you're still more flexible because your vehicle is smaller. There's a lot of advantages to have a tent and a rooftop tent in general, as opposed to having a van. But it comes with the protection and the cozy little tiny house feeling that you can have with a van.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I mean, that kind of, to me, it seems to be dependent on your lifestyle, right? Like, if you are a full time adventurer, or like taking super long trips, then yeah, absolutely, comfort would be number one. Like, I recently finished building a do-it-yourself rooftop tent for my Xterra, but literally the only reason was because my longest trip here probably is a week. If I'm really lucky,
that's perfect for a rooftop tent.
Yeah.
1 or 2 weeks, perfect for a rooftop tent. Longer than that, it's a chore, everyday chores to do it.
Yeah. I love that idea. I did a video long ago. Well, I started doing videos like 9 or 10 months ago, but like at the very beginning, I like got really into van life stuff, and I was just this is so cool. But I just think there's a lot of similarities there, right? It really just
there is, and you know, we're trying to find something in between where we have a van, but it needs to be a 4x4 van. We need to have the 4-wheel drive capability, because all those places, you can get to a lot of places with a 2-wheel drive vehicle.
Sure.
For sure, you can. 95% of the places you can get a 2-wheel drive. But the best places, you need 4-wheel drive.
Right.
And ground clearance, probably more important than 4-wheel drive.
Yeah, I think you're right. So how'd you guys get started in overlanding? Like, how'd you even figure out what it was and start doing it?
First of all, I've got two passions, which is, one is travel, the other one is cars. And this is basically combining the two. Right. But I since I was a kid, I liked camping as well. We used to camp with my family when I was a kid. And the in 2014, we, with a couple of friends of mine, we entered this challenge called the Mongolia Charity Rally. There's two types, but there's two types. There's Mongol Rally and Mongolia Charity Rally. So the Mongol Rally is when you buy a $1,000 car and you try to drive it from London to Mongolia through any means, like really small, tiny engine cars. And we haven't done this. We've done the other one where you buy a proper pickup truck and 4x4 and you drive it to Mongolia, but then you donate the truck to a charity in Mongolia.
That's cool.
And we failed to reach Mongolia because it broke down in Tajikistan. And this is the story that I just mentioned a few minutes ago. So that was the first trip that I realized that actually, although I've done big road trips before, but you know, it's not like overlanding when you live out of your car all the time and you're not staying in hotels, you use your camp equipment and you're staying in tents and campfire every night. So I've done road trips before, a lot of them and really long ones as well, including the US. But this was the first major trip when I realized actually there's this planet that you can drive around. You don't really need to, you're not confined within the country's borders or even just, you know, European borders or whatever. You can just drive across the whole continent through the Russian steppe or the Tajiki mountains and the Pamir Highway and places like that. And it's absolutely brilliant. And after that, once I finished, that was five weeks. Yeah. Okay. Cause we ended up hiring a Land Cruiser in Mongolia and we drove around the country a little bit with my friends. And then I realized actually this is fantastic. This is something I wanted to do. And then I had a football accident, like actually soccer accident, where I snapped my ACL. So I was lying in bed for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks after my operation. And I just stumbled upon a few overlanding YouTube channels. And that's when it started to go big. Like that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And that's when I really, really got into it. And I believe by that time I bought my vehicle with a thought in mind that at some point I'm going to use this truck to drive around the planet in some form. And this is how, so the more I read about it, the more I watched videos about this, the more interested I got, and I had some experience already. And I thought, okay, we need to do this and started buy the gear gradually. And then there was nothing else that I talked about when I met my girlfriend, Evelyn, that we're traveling. We do major trips together now. But when we met, apparently that was the only thing that I was talking about, my attempt to drive to Mongolia. So ever since, she didn't have a chance not to do this.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. It's funny because I think we're on like literally the same timeline because it was about just over 4 years ago, like 4.5 years ago, where I was coming off a lease on a vehicle and I was like, I want to get back into a Nissan, but it needs to be practical or my wife's going to kill me. Like I can't buy a sports car. And I was like, how about an Xterra? And I was like, I'll off-road it. And I go to YouTube and I start searching for like Xterra off-road and I start seeing overlanding videos. And I'm like, oh, this is so much cooler than just going and climbing over rocks. Like I want to go somewhere and take a trip and see things.
That's something I wanted to mention that I'm not into hardcore off-roading. I'm more like I like to go places and then enjoy the way to get there.
Right. Yeah. I come from like a background of I had a Jeep before and I off-roaded it. So like when I first bought the Xterra, that was kind of my thought, was I was going to go to off-road parks and like overcome obstacles with it until I started to learn about overlanding. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to just destroy my vehicle. Like, but I still do like to take like super challenging trails if I can with like rocks and water crossings and like I do like
I love water crossing as well. And I do like the challenge and I do like the difficult sections as well, but it's not my goal. That's right. That's mine.
Yeah. It's just an added benefit as far as I'm concerned, but still getting to see cool stuff is awesome. So very cool. So what was the first 4x4 vehicle you ever owned or like overlanding? I guess, was that the GX?
So it would have been that Mitsubishi that we bought it together with my friends, so three of us and they're friends from London but they are from New Zealand, and I guess that would have been the first 4x4 vehicle. I owned one third of it and ever since then I thought when I chose my truck, I actually wanted to have a Land Cruiser. Everything else I looked at, I was like, no, if I buy this, I'm going to be thinking about the Land Cruiser. I have to buy the Land Cruiser. So I bought it. And it would be called the Prado everywhere else in the world, and yeah. GX470 in the US. But mm-hmm. here in Europe, it's called the Land Cruiser 120. And yeah. it was the most sort of available, most affordable, the one that I knew that I could upgrade easily.
Yeah.
And things like that. So there was a lot of factors why I chose this, but I guess this is the first one, and I doubt I'm gonna ever sell it. It doesn't mean that it's my last one, but
right.
first of all, it's just so many memories, and it's just such a reliable truck, and it's so versatile. I can use it every day.
Yeah.
And nobody's gonna pay the right amount of money for me to sell it. So
right, that's awesome. Yeah. So tell us about your mods. So you mentioned that you started buying gear and stuff. Like, what have you done to the truck?
Okay. So I knew from my previous experience that what I wanted was a snorkel for sure, for cleaner mm-hmm. air into the engine. Because I knew our rough route along the way when we drove from Budapest to Singapore or when we drove to Africa, I knew that we got a lot of dust. Oh. There will be water crossings. I need a snorkel. So snorkel, bash plates. I needed a bash plate that saved the truck several times, saved the trip yeah. several times, a bash plate that covers the engine and the part of the transmission as well,
sure.
but not the diff lock in the back. And, okay. or at least not the differential. Now, I don't have a diff lock in the back, but the differential. And these are, I think, one of the two most important ones. Obviously, sure. all-terrain tires I've got. I've got an Expedition Ready roof rack from Front Runner. I used to have a rooftop tent. I sold it, unfortunately. I'm looking into getting another one. Nice. I've got a very powerful laser lamps LED lights on the front. Very, very powerful, surprisingly powerful. Like I was shocked how the factory headlights don't actually matter. I could turn them off in a completely open field, let's say in Mongolia, where there's no lights whatsoever, and there's no reference points, you know, there is no side of the road, there's no nothing, just like a whole plane. And of course, I've got the gear inside. So with my dad, who's a bit of a handyman, we built a drawer system and a fridge nice. Slide together from plywood. That's really good. That's like, it's covered with a nice, this cloth type material. I don't really know nice. what it is, but it's really, really nice. A couple of drawers and a fridge slide. And it used to be a long one all the way up to the front seats. Now it's just now we put the seats back, but on our trips, it was long enough for us to sleep inside, which was brilliant. Because cool. sometimes in bad weather, or if we stopped in a place where we couldn't open a rooftop tent, like in a village or something, then right. we slept inside. It wasn't comfortable, but it was sufficient for one night or two nights.
Right.
So I've got that. I've got a 12-volt fridge, angle fridge.
Nice.
I love that thing. And the recovery gears, like I don't have a winch right now,
okay.
but I've got all the, you know, snatch straps and recovery mats and Maxtrax type. It's yeah. not Maxtrax, it's something else, but it's the same thing, really.
Okay, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, a couple of jerry cans and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, of course, yeah, for those kind of trips, like that's, I have a couple jerry cans too, and I think I've taken them on one trip ever, like, because in the US, it's just not quite the same thing, right? Like, it's not, you're not really in the middle of nowhere for very long, anywhere over
here. Yeah, yeah.
So, very cool. So, let's talk about what's the, like, the coolest thing or the gnarliest obstacle that you've had to overcome on a trip? So, going back to that technical driving side, right? What's the craziest thing? I mean, it could be, I guess, the Mitsubishi breaking down, but is there anything else?
Yeah, there was a few mishaps on that trip because this was our first attempt. None of us were experienced on that trip, not my mates, sure. not me. And breaking down with that truck, it wasn't when we broke down completely and for good, it wasn't the first time. So we were driving up. It was around 11 o'clock in the evening at night, driving up on this little track, literally 10, 20 miles from the Afghanistan border in Tajikistan. We were not going to go to Afghanistan. We just our route was taking us through there, and then we were going to drive the Pamir Highway, which is like the highest, one of the highest drivable roads on Earth. And it's just that the scenery is absolutely incredible. Yeah. And we broke down a few times before that. And because it was like, we bought the truck on eBay without seeing it, just bought it.
That's scary.
And basically we went past the car. It was 11 o'clock at night in these areas where we didn't really know how safe it was. And this guy tried to stop us, and it was a small dirt road. It was a trail, really.
Yeah.
The guy was trying to stop us, and we could see that his car had some issues.
Okay.
And I think flat tire or something like that. But because we were scared, inexperienced, I don't know how to say it, but plainly scared, I guess.
Yeah.
We didn't stop. We like, no, we're not stopping. We might be able to help this guy, but who knows? We were in the middle of no man's land. Like, we're not stopping. Yeah. And about a minute later, not more than that, we broke down. Like our alternator, and this guy that we didn't help ended up helping us.
Oh wow!
Because he then rolled his car down the hill into the village, because that was this really long thing, and took his mates back up and fixed our truck. And next day we were on the road.
Wow!
And only for one more day, because then the alternator failed completely.
Oh.
But that was a bit of a story. But it was another, like, we've done a few on this Mongolian trip now. I mean, when we drove from Budapest to Singapore, so we went through Mongolia. And something to know about Mongolia is there's a lot of rivers, but there isn't many bridges. So we have to wade through rivers, and which is a lot of fun, but sometimes they are quite high. Like, up to the windscreen, up to the door handles, literally. And it's a lot of fun. But if you do it too many times and your truck is not prepared, you're going to get issues. Like, we had, automatic transmission. And one of the connections that was somehow connected to the transmission, and it was actually controlling the gear changes and stuff. So it was something to do with a computer controlling the transmission. Oh, no. Corroded, one of the connections corroded, and our transmission stopped working. It was working only until third gear and not fourth or fifth. So we had to get it fixed, but we were a little bit, we didn't know when it's going to give up completely, you know, when it's going to stop completely. And on top of that, we had problems with the starter motor because of all the mud and the water and everything else as well on top of that.
Yeah.
And we were in the Gobi Desert with two other vehicles.
Yeah.
And because our transmission is automatic, you can't jump start it, right? You either start it with a motor or not. You did start a motor or it's a trailer situation. And there isn't many trailers in the Gobi Desert. So we managed to start the truck in one morning after struggling for like 20 minutes, but we managed to start it. And then we had to sort of abandon our little group and drive to the next town, which was 200 kilometers, 120 miles away.
Wow.
Took us 18 hours to get there because of the terrain, without stopping the engine. That was, so I was just driving constantly, and we shared the drive with Evelyn. We shared 50-50%. Yeah. And this time I was only driving, and I was so tired after, I don't know, 14 hours of drive off-road, all of it off-road, 100% off-road. Through a mountain, through rocky stuff, it was really, really difficult. I got really tired, and there was these two tracks I was following. You can, funnily enough, off-road in Mongolia, you can follow Google Maps because the trails are on Google Maps.
Interesting.
And sometimes you lose reception, like cell phone reception, but otherwise it's working fine. But the two tracks for the tires ended up being too deep for my ground clearance. So the truck beached, and I would have noticed that in daylight, or if I wasn't that tired or something like that, but I was tired. It was at night, and we literally just beached. All four tires were in the air, and it took, so we were alone. It took me 4 hours to dig all this soil from beneath the truck.
Jeez.
And it was raining. It was cold. We were alone. It was an adventure. And then we got to this town the next morning, and the starter motor was fixed in half an hour. It just needed to be cleaned.
Oh wow!
But yeah, that was good. And then yeah. I don't know. Like, I have countless stories from these trips, but like two jerry cans weren't enough in Mauritania in the Sahara Desert. We drove through the Sahara Desert, and we used a full tank plus two jerry cans plus someone else's jerry can who helped us. And our truck is a diesel, so it's not like a V8, you know. And so it should be efficient, but not in the Sahara Desert. It's not
right. That's crazy. Yeah,
and we were escorted by the army in Mauritania because of all the some parts of the country is not even controlled by the government, so it's supposed to be dangerous. So there was this big group of it was a rally, like an amateur rally. We were not racing, so it's not
sure.
It's not a race. You have to do the stages. Right. And it's a group of, I think, 100 trucks. So it could be a good target for terrorists or whoever wants to get some valuables and their hands on some valuables. And so we were escorted by the army. And when we camped 100 cars together, we were surrounded by the Mauritanian army on big Toyota trucks and machine guns and stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, like, mine is like a 30-second water crossing that I did in West Virginia. It's not quite the same. Not quite the same in the U.S. That's awesome.
But also border crossings can provide a lot of funny stories as well. Thailand has got some rules that basically you need to have special permissions. You need to have a guide and all these red tape arranged before you go. Before you enter the country with your own vehicle. Obviously, it's very easy to enter Thailand, but if you drive your own vehicle, it's not. Okay. And so what people do is that, because these are new rules, some border patrol guys don't know the rules. Not all of them know the rules. So if you fail to enter because you're quite unlucky and somebody actually knows the rules when you enter and they turn you back into Laos, you just drive to the next border crossing and then there may be somebody there who doesn't know the rules. And that's what we've done 4 times.
Really?
And then eventually we could enter Thailand, yeah.
That's crazy.
With the help of a friend as well. But yeah, that's basically that's what we've done. So driving up and down in Laos just to enter Thailand, that was a bit of a task to do.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I've never done any border crossings, but I've watched, you know, Expedition Overland and those guys when they go and they do them. And that's exactly what they say, right? It's a crapshoot. You never know what you're going to get, if it's going to be easy or hard, or you're going to be detained or that's crazy. Very cool. Any places that you want to go that you haven't been able to go yet?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of places I want to go. And there's two things. I've been to quite a few countries. I've been to 77 countries by now.
Wow.
But I've been to a lot of places where I want to go back as an overlander, you know, so with driving my own truck. So it's a totally different experience. It's a completely different kind of trip. I've been backpacking around South America. I've been living in New Hampshire, actually, in the U.S. And I've traveled around the East Coast in the U.S. But what I actually want to do is the Pan American from Alaska to Ushuaia in Argentina, so the Pan American Highway. And since now that you mentioned Expedition Overland, so they've done it in 3 stages.
Right.
But once we get across the ocean, I'm probably going to do it in one go. But that's in the future sometime, but hopefully it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Also, London to Cape Town, I'll definitely want to do that at some point.
That's cool. Yeah.
But I think doing Africa is more important, more difficult than doing South America or North America, obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's more challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it would be. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Do you have like a favorite piece? If you had to pick one piece of like overlanding or off-road gear that you take with you and you have to have on every trip, what would you say your favorite piece of gear is?
Depends on whether it's a small or big piece. The small one actually I've got with me, that's just a knife, but I love that thing. It's actually right here. It's not I'm not sponsored by them, but I just love this thing.
Yeah.
The Bear Grylls knife is awesome.
Yeah.
And otherwise, like larger stuff, I do love my laser lamps. LED light. It's just such a useful piece of kit. And the fridge. The fridge is immense. That's just such a cool piece of kit.
I don't have a fridge yet. Like for me, it's my drawer system. It's like, it's the custom stuff, right? Like I could buy and also, the high limit. Good.
Yeah, because I built that. Yeah. Also, I built it. You know, the I don't know how the door on your truck is, but mine opens like an actual door like on the side. And I've got a fold down table, also DIY by my dad.
That's sweet.
So that's a very useful stuff as well. But the drawer system that you mentioned, if I can call that the piece of kit, then that's like because I made that. That's special. You know, that's
Yeah. I've always felt like I never until recently, I didn't have anything. I was just like into buying stuff. And so I would have said like, oh, it's my, you know, whatever, my high lift or something. Right. But I think fridge is up there too. I don't have one yet because I don't have a deep cycle battery and I just got a new battery like a year ago. So I'm like, I don't really want to go buy another new battery.
But you don't need one. Like if you just connect it to the, 12 volt and power it when you're driving, then it keeps for one night. It's fine. Even two nights, that's fine without any power.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, kind of what I've been thinking about is getting one of those battery packs, like a Jackery or something like that.
Yeah.
Because those will run it too, from what I understand. So
I've got one of these. I don't know if you can see it. This thing here. It's called the Arc Pack.
Okay.
I don't know if you see it.
Yeah,
it's basically it's supposed to be used for boats. That was the original purpose, but they keep selling it on overland shows in Europe. And you do need to buy a battery to put inside this box, but it's a management system. It manages the power of that battery by getting it charged during the day when you drive. And then without disconnecting anything, it provides power to whatever you connect to. So my fridge was powered by that. But it doesn't draw the battery that starts your engine at all.
That's perfect. Yeah.
So it's a nice piece of kit. And the reason why I bought this one, because I didn't need to rewire anything in the truck. That's another thing that I didn't want to touch. Yeah. Like the drivetrain and the electronics, I left that alone. That's all Toyota. That's all original factory state. And without rewiring and then eventually end up in a situation where I don't know which wire is not connected so that I can't start the truck. This is solving that problem because you just literally, it's like a suitcase. You put it in and then take it out.
That's awesome. I love that idea. I guess that like a Jackery or something would work similarly because you can charge it off 12 volt. So you could plug it into the truck and then you could have things plugged into that. You could work it that way. It's pretty expensive though. Those things are too. So.
Yeah. I find all gear expensive, isn't it? Like
it's true. If you want. Anytime you have to spend money, it's an expense, right?
Yeah. But what I'm trying to do is actually buy stuff that I keep for years. So cry once.
Yeah. I've always been pretty cheap, to be honest. But the longer that I go into this, the more I'm like, ugh, I wish I haven't had like four different of this thing. I wish I just bought one once and had a good one. So starting to learn those lessons.
Yeah.
So cool. So sort of changing gears here, let's talk a little bit about overlandsite.com. So your website, Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. But, you know, what got you started making your channels and like which came first?
Well, we've done a trip to Africa in early 2018 when we took part in this rally that I mentioned earlier.
Sure.
And I thought actually, because I was taking notes like what's going on, what's happening, and also before that, like a couple of months before that, I had the major upgrade done on my truck, so the lifted the suspension, and I had to choose the gear, like what kind of suspension and what kind of coil springs to put in to replace the air, what kind of roof rack to buy, snorkel, all that, and also went to a couple of really big overland shows. In Europe, so the largest one in the world actually is in Germany. It's called the Abenteuer und Allrad, which is like I think it's my German is very bad, but I think it's adventure and four wheel drive or something like that. That's the show, and it's larger than Overland Expo West or East. It's larger than those two combined. It's really big. And so many cool stuff. And the camp area is absolutely amazing. Like you see all these trucks that went around the world with all the little flags on the truck, the side of the trucks.
That's cool.
And it just got me interested so badly. And because I've done a little bit of an upgrade on my truck and then we went to Africa, I'm like, actually, it's actually really, really cool subject to actually write about this and then blog about this. And then maybe if I have a gear or if I know something, if I know about something and I know that actually this brand is better than that brand because I do my research and stuff, why don't I create a website around this based on my experience? And the to answer your question, the African trip kicked it off in a way. And then I got into it. And I'm like, it got some traction as well. 95% of the readers or visitors of the website are actually from the US.
Interesting.
And yeah, for some reason. And and it got some traction. And I just kept working on it. And also what I realized is that the Instagram account on my level blew up. It hasn't got 50,000 followers, but it's got, I don't know, 10,000-11,000 and started with one follower. So I thought, okay, actually people are interested in this stuff. And so I just kept doing it and I love the subject. So the African trip to answer your question. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. It is funny. I think you're right though. I think that it's because we're like years behind you guys, right? Like, I think you guys have been doing overlanding for years. And I mean, you know, even back in like the Land Rover, like Camel Trophy days, like all that stuff was awesome, but it never even really like scratched the surface over here. And now it's funny. I did one
now
video.
It's massive.
Yeah. Well, and I did one video a while ago where I pulled up Google Trends and I searched for the word overlanding.
Yeah,
it's like the beginning in like 2004 was when they started tracking that stuff, and it just goes like this.
So it's like, but I mean, I don't think it's not like people in the US haven't done it. It's just this word was missing. It was called camping with your Jeep. It's like it's not that people haven't been doing it.
Right.
It's just maybe not with a purpose. Like they didn't say I'm going overlanding. But I don't know. I think part of overlanding should also be that the length of the trip should be in the definition, I think, one thing. Yeah. Whether it's time or distance, it doesn't matter, but it needs to be. I don't think a weekend trip is overlanding. That's my point.
Yeah, but that has been a heated debate on like all of my I've done several videos about like what is real overlanding, and it just blows up. Like everybody is like, they have very strong opinions about it, but it's, I agree. Like most of my trips. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
No. Go on.
No, I was just gonna say most of my trips, because I'm in Indiana and I have kids, right? So, and I work a full time job. So most of my trips, if I'm really lucky, are like a Friday to Sunday, like a 2 day trip. But I just call those camping. Like I'm just going camping.
Yeah, camping. But if you throw in some off roading or throw in some off the grid camping, that's like that's already a good start.
Yeah.
And but it's funny that. On our Facebook page, we were on our way from Budapest to Singapore, which is like a, I don't know, like a 32,000 mile trip.
Wow.
And through countries that I've never visited before. Yeah. We went through Chechnya, which had the bloodiest war in the 90s in the world. And it just some quite sketchy places as well and difficult areas too. And I posted this video when we were approaching in Georgia, so the country Georgia. We were driving towards Russia, and I just took a 5 second video driving on the road, so tarmac road in the mountains coming close to the border, and I put a hashtag overlanding, and then I guess somebody picked up, not necessarily a follower of my page, but somebody picked up the hashtag and just sent it to a friend or shared it to a friend saying, ha, this guy thinks this is overlanding. And I was like, and I commented back, I'm like, we are driving a 32,000 mile trip through thick and thin. Like, I do think this is overlanding. Like, if you drive tomorrow, because you have 2 days off, you're driving to the Rockies and you climb a vertical wall.
Yeah.
I don't think that's overlanding. This is more overlanding. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, this debate can go on forever. But There's one thing that you just mentioned, that you have a full-time job and and obviously that limits your ability to travel a bit longer. But since you're working from home and you're in internet marketing, as you mentioned earlier, you could technically do that on the road.
I know. Yeah, believe me, my boss is super cool. And
And he's, I've told him like sometimes, like we had when I first started, so I just first started at this company maybe like 4 months ago. And literally before I was officially started, I said, he said, can we have a meeting on Friday or something? I was like, yeah, but I'm going to be in Hoosier National Forest. I'm going to be camping for the weekend. And he was like, oh, well, we can reschedule. I said, no, I know the spot I'm going to. I have internet, enough internet that I could like, you know, hook my phone up to my computer and make it work. So we literally, it was him in his house and then me in the woods with trees behind me. And we had a conference call basically like right nice. Before I started my job. So I definitely could do it. Like that's, I'm planning this year to take more trips to like the expos and things like that, which are 10 to 15 hours away from me. So like those will be overlanding, like they'll be 5 or 6 day trips at least. So I'm nice. Living with a car and I'm going to camp every night and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do it the right way. But
that's, yeah,
you can do it.
You know, the as much as I like reading and researching and writing about gear and, right. you know, as like, I guess a lot of people, these are like toys, isn't it? It's like tools and gear and stuff. But so that's one area that I wanted to sort of cover on the website. But what I'm getting into now is actually this. How can you overland for longer and then still keep making money, keep yeah. your job, build a business on the road? Because now technically it's possible. Because we can talk now from the other right. side of the world in the same way you can work as well. And this is a yeah. subject that I'm going to cover in the next probably 6 months to yeah. try to research it a bit more and probably write about this stuff.
Yeah, I read that blog, the one where how to make money on the road. I read that.
Yeah, yeah. I want to explore this subject a little bit deeper.
Yeah. yeah. Well, I mean, right now we're all trapped in our houses anyway. So who's to know? As long as you get your work done, right? Like, I could drive for 3 hours and then exactly. work for 8 hours on the side of the road. And, you know,
if there is only one benefit that this COVID situation is doing is definitely the remote working more. It's going to be more accepted. It's going to be more right. in the mainstream. It's not going to be weird anymore. Are you working in your pajamas at home?
Right. In the middle of the woods. Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. So let me see. What's my next question? So, you know, like you mentioned, you've made a few videos now and there are a lot of work and there's a lot of editing that goes into it, but do you have like a favorite video? What's your favorite one that you've ever made?
Okay. A favorite video. I don't think I've seen my favorite video yet because I know that, I have like, if are you asking about my own stuff?
Right? Yours that you've made. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So ones that have already been produced, there's like a 1 hour video on my YouTube channel that is about this Budapest Bamako rally, it's called. It's really just an overland trip with other people, to yep. be honest, it's like a big group of people
right.
through really, really awesome terrain and awesome places like Morocco and Mauritania and Senegal and the savannah in Senegal, Sahara Desert and rocky Atlas Mountains. It's wow. a really, I really love that movie. That yeah. it's, I'm biased, of course, but right. I think it's good. The actual filmmaking techniques and camera handling is not, it's nowhere near perfect, but sure. We used that trip to practice with the camera and take different angles and yeah. try to work out techniques and stuff to be able to be better on our big trip when we drove to from Budapest to Singapore. And that's why I'm saying my favorite video mm-hmm. is yet to be edited.
Okay. So, yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. Well, that's, yeah. I feel like as content creators, right, it's, you can be very critical of yourself, but then I feel like there are some videos that I watch and I just cringe a little bit, but then there are some that I watch and I'm like, wow, I really like did, I worked really hard on that and I actually am really happy with the result. Right. Like,
and do you, and, you know, unless you put yourself out there and talk into the camera and right. create those cringeworthy moments, you're not going to yeah. get better. You have to get right. through that and then you're going to okay. get better.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. Yeah. It's, I tell people all the time, like, do not go back and watch my early videos. The lighting was really bad. The camera angle was really bad. Like everything was terrible. It's mostly just like the first like 20 videos that I made probably were just my camera with me holding it while I'm driving off road.
Like, no, but you know, this is what makes it more real. I think it's not the professional camera right. angles and the professional equipment with the right light. It's just because yeah. what you're showing shows that anybody can actually go out, buy a truck and then yeah. enjoy this kind of hobby yeah. because it's a hobby. Eventually it's a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I that's kind of, when I started, I wanted to be Expedition Overland, right? Like I was like, man, I would love to have like four trucks and like one of them's a camera truck and I've got people doing all the filming for me. And then in the last, so again, I've been doing it for about 10 months, but in the last 4 or 5 months, I've realized that's not my niche at all, right? Like that's, you're right. There's different niches for different types of folks, but I think more people are into exactly what you were talking about, right? Like trying to find a way to do it more, but realistically doing weekend trips or doing 4 or 5 day trips a couple times a year. So that's kind of more what I'm going towards now, is similar to you, right? Where it's more like, how can I help real people do real overlanding trips?
So, yeah. And you know, the key to, I don't know, to grow your audience is probably consistency. The more you do it, the more people are going to, you know, you're going to pick up those subscribers
I think that you're absolutely right. So, you know, you mentioned all the different camera angles and you're getting ready to go on another trip. Like when you go out, I know for me, like I have big aspirations every time I go on a trip and I'm going to shoot all these, you know, I'm going to be Expedition Overland. I'm going to have the drone going and all this stuff filming. But once I get out on the trips and I'm kind of like, I just want to enjoy it. Do you get a chance to enjoy the trips or do you have to shoot video all the time?
The more we talk about videos, the more guilty I feel because I've got all those nice footage sitting on my hard drive and I need to get started on that. But I'm lucky in that way because Evelyn, my girlfriend, who we're traveling with together all the time, and she's really willing to help me in creating the videos because she also enjoys it. But what we do, we have a couple of walkie-talkies, and rather than just shoot from inside the truck,
right,
or have the GoPro on the windscreen, or maybe a couple of drone shots following us, and I don't know, go past the drone or something like that. We actually do shots where one of us, because we shared the drive, one of us actually stands in the next corner, and we go like, okay, go now, and we do shots from the outside. Nice. Yeah. And obviously that's a lot of driving back and forth, but it's eventually worth it because you have those angles where you can cut it together in a way that actually you were on the road and you went past places and so I do enjoy the trip, but I have a big help with Evelyn because she takes half of the work off of my shoulders and does it and probably even more. Like she's just like, she's even asking without me asking, oh, shall I get out here and then take a shot from you driving past? So that helps a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm waiting for my kids to get old enough to be able to force them into that.
So. Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. So last couple questions here, and then I'll let you go for dinner. But does having a YouTube channel influence like where and when you go on trips? Like, do you feel like you have to get content for videos or for Instagram and that forces you out on trips, or do you just kind of pick the trips and then do it?
I don't take trips just to take photos or just to take videos, but actually when I bought my FJ40 a year ago, that's when I'm like, I need to get out. It's like golden hour now. I need to get out, take photos because this car is just beautiful.
Yeah.
This truck needs to be photographed, you know? But that was more about the truck rather than the trip. But I have so many unpublished photos and so much unedited footage of videos. Yeah. I don't need to actually actively go out and just to take videos, just to take photos, just to create content. I have a lot of stuff sitting and getting wasted on my hard drives because I don't have time to edit it all and show it all.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
I think that question comes from a place of personal pain because, so I live in Indiana, but I live in like a neighborhood. So like, I just feel silly like going out and being like, here's my bumper and my winch. And there's like a minivan driving by on the road, you know? So like I feel like I have to like get out to the forest even to just like do a chair review, right? Like I'm like,
you know, but you know, that's something that I should be doing more. Every movie that I've, there's only one real movie that I've done already, and there is those other footages that are other quickly edited sort of little movies on the or little videos on my YouTube channel, which like just music and just shows where we're going. Those are 99% only about the trip. I say only, like it's about the trip.
Right.
And I should be doing more about, okay, I chose this tire because, and right. I've got this snorkel and the snorkel is for, you know, those kind of more guide type videos. I should be doing sure. more of that. And yeah, I'm actually committing myself here on camera that I will be doing that this season.
Nice. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. It's, you were right. You talked about like consistency and frequency, right? And I think that's 100% what YouTube is looking for. Right. And an audience. Right. So
yeah.
That I was trying to do big epic trips forever. And then I realized, oh, I hardly ever even get the chance to do that. So we're talking about one, maybe two videos a year if I was doing that. So that's when I was like, let's just talk about overlanding. Like I can just sit at a desk and we can have a conversation about overlanding. I can talk to other people that do it. Right. It's, and people have loved it. People have really responded well. So,
yeah, I really liked it. Like, obviously, a lot of your videos have the same background that you have now. I really like the setup that you've done.
Thanks.
Yeah. Is this your spare room or?
Yeah. So I did a little short video that shows the truth. Like, this is all a lie, right? Like, this is just my basement.
I have a look at that one. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's if you look for the one that's like how I set up my studio or something like that.
Okay, you'll see I'll it. Have a look.
It's literally just a bed frame, like a box spring with pallet wood nailed to it. And then I put a shelf on it and then I put like a little lamp on it and wired some stuff up. But you know, that's very much that like expedition overland type, right? Like I'm looking at my videos in like my boring gray wall basement and I'm like, okay, I need to do something. And this isn't permanent. So my wife wasn't going to freak out and get mad at me. So, yeah. But thank you. I'm glad that you appreciate it and like it.
No, yeah.
Worth the work. So final question, and it's a two-parter. What are your goals for your channels? So like it could be YouTube, Instagram, whatever. And which one is kind of your focus in the near future?
Okay. Well, I do think that my main project is the website and not the channels, not the YouTube and not the Instagram. I'm trying to use my YouTube channel, which is not developed at all. So that's really basic. So the YouTube channel and the Instagram to support my website. So my the website is the main sort of asset that I'm trying to build. But what I'm trying to do with the website is to make it a very large database for information. Right. So gear reviews, guides, how-tos, and trip reports. So if obviously there's very good resources out there already, and I think forums are also very, very good.
Sure.
But if I had to say just one website, what's the overlanding website where you go and there's everything is there. You don't need to go anywhere else. Like, let's say you want to shop and you go on Amazon or you want to, but I'm not selling anything, so I'm not. That wasn't a good idea. But let's say you want to read news, financial news, you go on CNBC or whatever.
Yeah.
So I want to be that hub type place where you go and okay, this is about overlanding, and I can spend a couple hours of here just getting lost reading all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
That's my goal. That's my goal with the website.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that's super smart too. Like, it's a weird place nowadays, I feel like, because so coming from like marketing, right? Like owned media is where you want to be. Like I want people coming to my website. So I own the content. I can control the advertising. I can get sponsorship. I can show people numbers. But like,
we could probably geek down on SEO and stuff like that. Now I'm learning.
I'm not that great at SEO, but yeah, but I mean, I understand it a little bit, right? But like, but now I just feel like YouTube is almost like obliterated that, I feel like, because they control all of the monetization and they control who sees what. And so it's like, but I have started to recently try to be better about then going to my site and breaking it out and writing an article about what the video was about and then linking to the video. But it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. So I respect you.
It is hard. Work. It is. And also YouTube's got its own SEO as well. I don't know if you know about that. Yeah. So obviously you have to put the tags and everything, but, another thing that I didn't mention before is that now that you mentioned sponsors, is something I want to write about next. And it's like a mini course for free, like put it on my website saying, or talking about how you can actually get sponsors if you want to be an overlander part-time or whatever, if you want to have a nice track and you want to take nice pictures, how do you get somebody to sponsor you? Because I've done it. Like I've done it a few times and we had lots of sponsors.
Nice.
And I just want to write down the process, how I got there and something like that. I think people would be interested in that.
I would love to read that. I'm not sponsored at all right now, anybody. So if you're watching and you want to sponsor me, let me know. So yeah, guys, this was Ference. Ference, thanks so much for being with me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you very much.
Super fun. And like I mentioned at the beginning, definitely go down in the, into the description, check out all of his channels, check out his website, which is sort of the main focus. He's got a lot of great content on there. I've read through a bunch of his blogs already, and they're just like how to spend more time overlanding is great. So definitely check out all his stuff below. And thank you all for watching.
All right, guys. So that was the interview with Ference of OverlandSite.com. Again, super fun, man. This guy was a ton of fun, and I appreciate him being flexible. It was about 11 o'clock my time and about 5 o'clock p.m. his time. So, you know, being on opposite sides of the world makes that a little interesting, but with the virtual, you know, abilities of Zoom, it's pretty easy, actually. So it was pretty cool. So I appreciate him coming on. As I mentioned before, definitely go down to the description in the video or on the podcast and go check out his website, OverlandSite.com. He's also on Instagram, and he's newly started a YouTube channel. So I think there's going to be more content coming there soon as well. So definitely go give him a subscribe. Definitely go check him out because, man, this guy has done some cool stuff. So I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll be back next week. Thanks. Have a good one. Bye.